Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
On our way into this conversation, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary specialty and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state of Maryland, the number is 1-800-492-5538. Anthony and I are joined by somebody who Anthony has a huge amount of respect for.
I do.
Mary Alice Ernish, who is founder of Audit Baltimore. She wrote the op-ed piece in the Baltimore Brew today, and she is conducting an independent review of the best auditing practices among the 26 largest U.S. cities. Has stepped out of the city council meeting she's observing to join us here. She's at City Hall, and Mary Alice Ernish, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark.
And the number here, by the way, folks, is 410-319-8888.
Mary Alice, this is Anthony McCarthy. I'm very curious. Let's start at the most basic level. And then I am so impressed with this op-ed and the research that you're doing. When we think of Councilman Stokes, Carl Stokes' legislation and the conversation that's been taking place over the last several weeks around auditing city agencies, could you just give our listeners an idea where Baltimore falls when it comes to statutory requirements to audit, and not even statutory requirements, but what are best practices? The councilman asked for biannual, every 2 years, auditing agencies. Where does Baltimore fall?
Well, first, I'd like to start out by saying, Anthony, that I applaud the efforts and hard work, and I would like to add courageous hard work by Councilman Stokes, the sponsor of the bill, as you know, by Councilman Jim Craft, and by City Council President Jack Young. I was greatly influenced also by Chris Delaporte, a former Rec and Parks director and former member of the Rec and Parks Advisory Board, who brought this issue to my attention. And I just wanted to acknowledge these important influences, because without their tutoring me and mentoring me on this issue, I would not have been able to move forward with this research. So back to your first question on where Baltimore stacks up. There are 26 cities in the United States that were identified in the 2010 census as having populations of at least 600,000 residents. Baltimore is the 21st largest city in the United States according to this particular census. So if you will, we could think of these cities as our sister cities. Mm-hmm. And that we should be looking to behave in similar ways when it comes to audit policy. And so just to give you an idea, there are a number of cities that do have what I would call, and remember, I am working strictly from charters. I read probably over 30 city charters. This work is not yet done. It's an iterative process. And so to start with, for example, New York City Charter requires that there is some type of audit, be that financial, performance, special audit, IT, at least once every 4 years of every city office and department. Another example of what I call a time-bound or calendar-specific audit would be the city of Memphis, Tennessee, that requires per city charter every city office annually. Detroit, on the other hand, requires audits of every city department and office every 2 years. So there are a considerable number that are time bound, and that's what Councilman Stokes is presenting today, is the argument for biennial audits. So that's certainly one model that is out there. Another model that I've come across and have spoken to extensively with a number of auditors across the country and comptroller's office is a model where a city has an annual audit plan and the city auditor engages in what's called risk assessment to identify the city agencies or departments, contracts, what have you, by specified risk assessment methods. And so an example of that would be Houston. Okay, they don't mandate, Houston City Charter does not mandate time-bound audits, but they do mandate that there is an annual audit plan, as does Phoenix, San Antonio, San Diego, Dallas, San Jose, Fort Worth, Texas, Austin, Texas. Actually, Austin is very interesting because they passed a charter amendment. I don't know if it was an amendment, I stand to be corrected, but a five-year annual strategic audit plan. So they've taken things even a step forward. They're not just looking 1 year at a time, but they're saying, what does the audit horizon look like over the next 5 years? The third model that I have come up with, or that I have found, rather, is a model that I would call the hybrid model, and that cities that do not have time-bound or calendar-specific audits, but their city charters require annual audit plan in addition to an independent audit committee. Phoenix, audit committee and audit plan, San Antonio both, San Diego both, Dallas both. Let's see on my list who's another
I think this is a really important piece for the people in Baltimore to kind of consider. The question we'll find out in the next soon will be whether or not the city council actually passes this legislation so we can vote on this in the fall, even though it's a tad watered down. But one of the things you wrote in your op-ed piece for the Baltimore Bruin, folks, join us here at 410-319-8888, is that you talked about audits that took place in two cities, San Francisco and Philadelphia, of their fire departments.
Yes.
And in San Francisco, the audit, we captured $10.9 million.
San Diego.
Thank you for correcting me. They recaptured $10.9 million. And in Philadelphia, it was $60 million. You had 60 in your article, but 50 in your article, Rick, so I'm sorry. And it's my eyes, not your writing.
That's okay.
They're from uncollected revenue, which we have probably lots of here in Baltimore that you quoted. Our budget director, Klein, is saying that he believes, quote unquote, that that exists here as well. And we've just closed these fire companies. And so, I mean, this is the madness of it, that we won't do it for some reason. We want to kind of blame each other. We want to say, city controller, it's your job, the mayor says, and the city controller says, I can't do it because the mayor won't give us money in the budget. But it's like little kids bickering in a playground. While we're losing our pants,
I think you're right, Mark, and that's why I set out to try to find the examples, the best practices that are out there, in the hope that we can move toward evidence-based audit policy, and that we are not reinventing the wheel.
I'm very curious when we look at. What should be, I guess is what I'm asking, Mary Alice, what should be the standard? And I know that you've given us several examples of options. But what is, when you think of auditing and when you think of accounting and what jurisdictions and municipalities should be doing, what should we be reaching for? What should be the gold standard for us to be able to find waste and fraud, but also just tighten up on efficiency?
Well, Anthony, I think we need to draw on authoritative sources, and those authoritative sources are the Government Accountability Office and the government auditing standards by which, incidentally, the Baltimore City Charter obliges us to follow, but also the International Standards for the Professional Practice of Internal Auditing that is published by the Institute of Internal Auditors, but also following recommendations by groups like the Association of Local Government Auditors that performed our peer review for us here in Baltimore in January. They have an excellent piece, a document that is freely available on their website, which is www.governmentauditors.org, and it's called the Model Legislation Guidelines for Local Government Auditors. It's all there. It's 8 pages. It's simple to read, and we really need to be looking at what are the experts saying? And making evidence-based policy based on these two groups of published standards that professional auditors follow, but also looking at all the good work that nonprofit groups like ALGA have done.
And Mark, one of the components of this that it's hard for us to measure, and I'm sure the listening audience can appreciate this, is that there's a lot of politics involved in this. And I think we'd be hard pressed to find people who'd say they don't believe that city agencies should be audited. That the residents and citizens of Baltimore shouldn't know what their tax dollars are going for. I don't think we're going to find people saying that.
Right.
I think what we are going to find is, as you said, this kind of finger pointing and blame game of how we've gotten to the point where we are, where everything is tight, where we're shutting things down, And we're almost at a point of fear, frozen in fear of digging too deep, Mark, because we will find out some very ugly things about waste, and not just waste, but inefficiency.
But you would think, and folks, I'd like to hear you join us here, 410-319-8888. Maybe you voted for the people in your district to represent you in the city council. Maybe you voted for Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. Obviously, many of you did. She wouldn't
That's
be mayor.
Right.
But what do you expect them to be doing for you, for us, for the citizens? 410-319-8888. We really want to hear from you. And in the coming weeks, we'll have them on to talk about this. But, you know, if we're talking about being in an economic moment when we are losing our financial shirts, where agencies have to cut, we're cutting the fire department, we're not putting enough money in our schools, our roads need repair, all the rest, and we are talking about not having audits. We're talking about so that's a huge piece of what we have to face here in Baltimore. And then think about what's about to happen inside the city council right now, these votes that are taking place over this. When's the vote going to happen?
It's tonight.
It's tonight. Mm-hmm. So when the vote happens tonight, one of the things we may explore tomorrow on the show in our first hour in about the city of Baltimore is how people voted and why. I mean, do you want your city council representatives to have more power or not? And what do you think of city council representatives who think they shouldn't have more power representing us, the citizens of Baltimore?
Because, Mark, in reference to the audits, it may be, and I'm not sure Mary is there. She may know more. Mary Alice is there. She may know more what's happening right now. But there was talk earlier today that the audits bill that was killed, then brought back to life, sent back to committee, amended, supposedly coming to the floor again for second reader tonight.
Right. Second reader is not final vote, though.
No, but may in fact be double read tonight and killed or passed tonight. So they may in fact do second and third reader tonight and essentially end this conversation about audits. Well, we'll end the conversation, but essentially, legislatively, the referendum would not take place if it was double read tonight and killed tonight. And so it's very interesting. Mary Alice, let me ask you real quick, because one of the things that Mark and I were talking about before we went on the air, a lot of council members that we're talking to are telling us that we have no idea, and really they don't either, the truth be told, the cost of these audits. But one of the reasons they're giving as why they're not supporting giving the citizens of the city the opportunity to demand these audits is because the cost may be prohibitive. What do you think about that?
I think, Anthony, what has disturbed me in this whole conversation is we are only the only thing that's being discussed are gross costs.
Mm-hmm.
No one is talking about recapture costs. No one is talking about the net cost. For example, the net cost of the audits. And in fact, I did speak to someone in the Philadelphia Comptroller's Office on Friday, mm-hmm. and he informed me that their auditors, and they have a lot, they have probably 70 or 80 full-time auditors, but again, I remind you, they audit annually every city office and department, but their calculated savings in the past fiscal year was over $300,000 per auditor. $300,000 per auditor. So audits in the short run, it will be painful, it will be ugly, and it may even be expensive. But I would also wager to bet that there will be a certain, if we identify through risk assessment methods the right areas to audit, I suspect there will be windfall. In the short term, this will be ugly. In the long term, it will audits pay for themselves. And that is the
exactly. Exactly. I mean, that let's open the phone to some of our listeners, and we're going to spend the next 45 minutes talking about this on the air, as well as some other issues surrounding surrounding this. So 410-319-8888 is the number here. I said my old friend Aaron Meisner called in and hung up. Aaron, come back. We want to hear what you have to say. You always have something good to say. Ngozi, you're on the air. Hello, Ngozi, you're on the air. We can't.
There she is.
There you are.
I know there's a lot of waste of whatever that takes place and spending in the city. I had three incidences where my home was flooded with sewage from a Baltimore City sewage line. They came and clogged it. The sewage stopped flowing into my home, mine and the neighbor's home. This Christmas night, 2009, was the first time. Then September 7th last year, and then again September 23rd last year. And each time I approached the city, they would send me a letter stating that there were was trash and bags in the line, and they are not accepting responsibility. Now, as a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen, I want to know what is my recourse. I mean, because how long can that be going on? You know?
Yep, I hear you. That's the kind of things that we need answers for. I mean, it shouldn't be going on as long as you're talking about it. Anthony, you have a thought?
Well, I'm just curious at what the reasoning, Ngozi, that the city is giving you that they are not going to accept responsibility for the costs. If it's a city line and it's flowing into your home, it seems like it's, so many of these things seem like common sense. The city would be, in fact, responsible for those costs. So what are they saying to you why they're going to deny paying those calls for you? Ngozi?
Can you hear me?
There you are. Mm-hmm.
Yes, they said they investigated my claim on the dates in question,
uh-huh.
and the lines were clogged with trash bags and grease, and they are not accepting responsibility. They cannot be held accountable, and I have all of their letters.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it's so unfair. You know, the first time, even now, I'm trying to refurbish my home because I had to remove the drywall. This last time, I had to call it in a disaster cleaning company because there was a foot of sewage in my home. And I have all the photos, which I sent in to the law department or whoever investigates, you know, these claims. I sent all the photos. I sent everything.
Right.
And they give me this generic letter that they are not going to accept responsibility.
So who's your city council person?
We're in the 43rd district.
That's assembly.
Yeah. What part of the city do you live in Ngozi?
I live in the northeast Baltimore in the Hamilton area.
Hamilton. That might be Bobby Curran.
Bobby Curran or Bill Henry.
Let me suggest this. Mm-hmm. Before you hang up, Ngozi, uh-huh. We'll get your phone number and email address from you, and a producer will pick it up, and we will find out who your city council person is and get them in touch with you. How's that?
Thank you so much.
All right.
Mark, another interesting point, and I know we have a bunch of folks who want to join in the conversation, is that I'm very curious at how the council members seem to be entrenched in their position on these audits. All of them have a very specific reason why they don't think it's necessary or in the frequency that the legislation is calling. It's amazing because when we talk to people like Ngozi, and you and I can walk out the door right now and people would be yelling at us about, yes, common sense dictates
right. You
audit. So anyway, I find it very politically interesting.
I do too.
That so many people are tone deaf on this.
If I could interject mm-hmm. for 1 second, Anthony, I think part of this is this has happened very, very rapidly. I know it had.
You're right.
I know it didn't for Councilman Stokes. He's been working diligently on this for quite some time. But for me, the response, I mean, when I started this process, I had no idea of what I was tapping into and the response that I would get from people. And I think from where I sit, much has been done, but much remains to be done in terms of public education, but also educating our city council members, because there's just so much out there, and I'm still wading through
it.
We really need to do a better job at educating the public why this is important, why this is necessary, and why we need to behave like other large cities, but also educating our city council members.
Let's go at 410-319-8888, and we see Hank, you're going to get on. Clarence, you're going to get on. We're going to go first to Aaron Meisner. You're on the air.
Hi, Mark and Anthony. I had a really interesting experience with regard to the Executive Appointments Committee of the City Council. I was making the point to one of the members that it's very hard to know whether to confirm or deny a term to an agency head until you've seen audited books.
Mm.
And if you look at the work of Executive Appointments...
Aaron?
I'm here.
Aaron, are you there? Did we lose Aaron?
Aaron, did we lose you?
Oh.
All right, Aaron, call back. We'll get you back on. I want you to hear what you had to say. I'm sorry about that.
Interesting point, because the mayor just recently reappointed James Clack, the chief of the fire department,
right,
with a very healthy raise in his reappointment. And as he was reappointed, and this is what we learned when we had our union reps on last week on the Steiner Show, that two deputy chiefs were given 9% raises by the chief as he was being reappointed by the mayor.
Right.
And I think the point that Aaron is making, if we're regularly auditing these agencies, then these raises and these performance bonuses that seem to be given out routinely, not just by this administration, but administrations for decades in the city, maybe would be more scrutinized more, Mark, if we were auditing and we had a genuine idea of the finances of these agencies. And how inappropriate is it to get these large raises, given the fact that the agency is in financial trouble and we're shutting down fire stations? I think that's the question that a lot of people are asking. I'm not making a judgment call. The mayor obviously felt it was appropriate, and members of the council felt it was appropriate because they're going to vote for his reappointment. But I think it raises a lot of questions around how, as Mary said, these audits really will pay for themselves, and they seem common sense to me.
And they, right, exactly. I mean, especially our biggest agencies, the most complex agencies, not being audited, whether it's Department of Public Works or housing, the fire department, the police department, it just makes little sense. Little sense. Let's go to another caller here before we come back to Mary, before we take a break and then come right back to our conversation. 410-319-8888. Let's see. Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Mark, Mr. Steiner. Even with an audit, I would like to see the audit cycle smack dab in the middle of one's terms. I don't want to play the okey-doke game where the audit comes after you've been reelected to office. And also, I think the issue of tax breaks for businesses in this city has overshadowed why are we spending money for businesses to locate in this city doing infrastructure work from when they should be paying it for themselves. But my main point is, the audit cycle, if we get one, should be right in the middle of someone's term for office. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Mary?
Yes.
So tell me, what's the sense of what's going on down there where you are now? You just walked out.
I have to step out into the hall, and I think what I'll do is I'll try to run back in. If you said you're going to take a break, I'd like to kind of to catch up. So it's hard for me. I'm actually sitting on the downstairs on the ground floor of City Hall. Hoping to dash in for a minute and catch up on what's going on there. But I did want to respond just very quickly to Clarence's comments mm-hmm. about doing audit smack dab in the middle of an election cycle. That is certainly one way to do it. The other way to do it, and we need to bear in mind that we need to be very careful when we're doing risk, you know, our risk assessment, whether it's we're doing it through time-specific audits, through city charter every 2 years, every year, what have you. I'd like to say that historically in Baltimore, when you look over the historical record, whether you go back to the 1940s, whether you go back to the 1970s, the de facto practice in Baltimore City for most city departments was every 2 years, as was the de facto practice for the state. In the state charter, it used to say any office or department that receives state money. This was changed under former Governor Mandel's restructuring in the 1970s in the state, and it now currently the state charter reads every state department at least once every 3 years. So all we're saying is let's bring ourselves more in line with the other cities, bring ourselves more in line with the state.
Let's go to another caller here. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, you know, maybe I might have misunderstood you. I don't know. Did you say that the mayor, Rawlings Blake, is for the audits or against it? I always thought she was against it. But, you know, my personal opinion, I think Rawlings Blake is a manipulator. I think on a lot of issues, and I don't have the time to go over them, but on a lot of issues, she really ducks a lot of important questions. She really manipulates a lot of information. On a lot of issues and on this, a lot of times it just seems like she really doesn't want proper oversight because she wants to control and manipulate what's going on, control and manipulate the information. She wants to control and manipulate the city council. She wants complete power over everything. I don't trust her. I think she's a snake oil salesman. Cynical but true.
Boy, that is cynical.
Well, that's the way it is. You got to speak the truth.
But, you know, it's interesting because, Mark, I think as observers, I have watched a lot of people say what the caller just shared with us about the administration, and not just about Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake's administration, Mayor Dixon's, Mayor O'Malley's strength. We have a very strong mayoral system of government.
One of the most powerful in the country.
I think, if not the most powerful right. In the country. And as much as they, when they were members of the council, Mayor O'Malley, Mayor Dixon, and now Mayor Rawlings Blake all really were critics of how powerful the administrations were. But once they get the reins of government, not only is it a very difficult job, a lot of balls in the air, a lot of management taking place, but I think they really do appreciate having that amount of control consolidated within their office. And interestingly enough, though, Mark, we can't let the city council off the hook. And full disclosure, many people know I work part-time for Councilman Carl Stokes. But we cannot let these folks off the hook, because you can't be manipulated when you know that that manipulation is taking place. You are either consenting to that, and many people believe that this council consents to whatever the whims of any administration is. We don't have a strong legislative branch.
Well, I just sent an email out to my producer saying let's try to book as many city council members as we can for tomorrow night to see what they have to say.
It would be very interesting.
I want to thank Mary Alice Ernish, founder of Audit Baltimore, for taking her time with us tonight. I look forward to having you back on the show many times in the future.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mary Alice.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure to be with both you and with Anthony. And I'm going to nip into the City Hall proceedings now, so thank you.
Cool. All right, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. And Hank and the other people we're trying to get through, hold on. We got to take a break, go to traffic. And Hank, if you got to go pick up some passengers, pick them up and call right back. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Anthony and I will be back to take your calls after we hit some traffic.